All right, greetings, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting edition of Radio Vision. This is our 21st episode of Radio Vision. I am John Swansong Parker, and joining me as always, wow, fumbling over my words, is the Robin to my Batman, Mr. Zach Rattel. Zach, how's it going?
You want to have a pillow fight? I'm doing good. How's your night going?
It's such a wild quote pull right there. I'm doing good. It's been a long week. The holidays have definitely, worn on me at work. We're recording this on January 4th, 2024. So getting through the Christmas and the New Year's season at work, but glad you could join me as always as we review every episode of Batman the Animated Series.
Good on this to podcast be feed. Back. It feels like it's been a nice little fucking gap. I mean, the last time that we did one of these things, it was before Christmas, before the holidays, before all that stuff. So it's been a nice little chunk. I mean, the Batman Mask of the Phantasm episode. Thank you all, everyone, to listening to that one. I'm sure I'll plug that shit in a little bit, but that episode is getting good feedback there from the universe. So cool.
Yeah, definitely. It went up on Christmas Day for its 30th anniversary. Since then, we've kind of been on a mid hiatus, but we are diving back into our full on rewatch. This is a spinoff show of Radiovania, which is our main podcast where we talk about books, comics, games, movies, TV shows, sometimes sports. Fantasy football is over, so you no longer have to listen to those segments, but go check all those out. You can find all that at radiovania.com or go to YouTube and search for Radiovania. And then if you have any thoughts, things that you want to share, or if you want to email us questions, things that we might use on the show, hit us up at radiovaniashow@gmail.com. One person recently was able to do that actually on a podcast that we needed a lot of help for our Mask of the Phantasm pod. And that person has decided that he loves Batman so much that he just couldn't not let his opinions be heard on the podcast. We are joined by a special guest on this episode, Zach, and it's our good friend Mark. Mark, how's it going?
It's going really well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
You get to see how the magic is made.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, it's off to a great start. you get to kind of sit down on this podcast and talk about these three specific episodes of Batman this week, but you kind of want to share your background with Batman the Animated Series as a show, kind of maybe when you got into it or things like that. I think we typically start with those when we talk about this.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to talk about that. I guess I've always been a huge fan of Batman. My mom would probably say that her favorite hero is Batman, and then just hit me with everything as a kid. So as a kid, I did have a Batman the Animated Series themed bedroom.
Nice.
No shit.
Bed sheets, wallpaper.
Oh, yeah.
My dad cut out each one of the squares of the wallpaper to make, like, each hero up on top of the, like, front of my room. So I got to watch the show. A lot of it was, like, reruns at that point.
Yeah.
In syndication. But I was a huge fan of it back then, and as I grew to be an adult, one of my favorite hobbies is I love the animated movies. So the direct-to-release animated films all the way through college. I was just collecting every single one that came out. I also love X-Men the Animated Series. So I like following those series. I think that they have a really unique way of doing storytelling, and they can do a lot of things that live action can't do.
Yeah, for sure.
And they can do it better. So, I mean, if you're going to do an explosion and blow up a city, you can animate that way easier than you can practical
it's
effects.
Nolan is like, true. No, wrong. It's like, wrong. I can blow up a city.
There's certain heroes like Martian Manhunter.
Who's big time. Yeah.
And it's your, I think we've all seen some of the like CW shows, which are great, by the way. I'm not knocking them. Where there's an effect or a superpower that doesn't translate onto the screen as well. Like Vixen has a lot of animal transformations where she like kind of gets the aura of an elephant and then can like smash into things, which like live action kind of looks silly, but like animated, you're like, oh, that's awesome.
Man, so. I just didn't understand the last two sentences that that man just said. Vixen turns into an elephant, Vixen? Gets an aura. Who is Vixen? Is this Flash? Is it the Flash character?
Vixen no, is not, it, no, she's a member of the Justice League.
Justice League, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think there's a lot of fun in the animated series, and it's kind of my roots for my sure. love of the future animation. So, definitely enjoyed it as a kid and love rewatching it as an adult. Coming up to this pod, rewatching this episode, just like turning it on and listening to the theme song.
Yeah.
I'm like, heck yeah, man. My action figures as a kid showed up and then Batman shows up and da 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 da.
Can I just say, it hits every time. I don't know if talk about this enough, but we've been doing this podcast now for months. We're at episode over number, what is it, 20? We've been doing it for over a year. Mm-hmm. Every single goddamn time that I boot up the HBO Max and it goes I'm like, all right, let's go. I'm in. Like, there's never a point where the theme song is dull. It always hits.
Yeah, for sure. And Mark, you touched on something that I had mentioned in the past too, and I know you and I have talked about off the mic and in person before, which is just that, like you said, it there will never be able to be a better version of the DC universe on screen than what they were able to accomplish with the cartoons. Characters like Martian Manhunter, Gorilla Grodd, things like that. Those are things that are going to be so hard to translate, especially like, you know, James Gunn, he's got his work cut out for him. I wish him well, and I hope those movies are good, but there's just like a blueprint almost where when you watch this stuff so young and then rewatch it, you just kind of like have that in the back of your mind at all times. And you're like almost like subconsciously comparing to it, you know, when you're seeing a new take on DC stuff.
Yeah, and especially when it comes to like Batman the Animated or Justice League Unlimited, these are characters that are like boiled down to their core.
Yeah.
And created by people who like they just love the characters so much.
Yeah.
That they're retelling the stories, but like cherry picking the best little parts and just
for sure.
Putting them together. So that's something that's tough to do from a live action standpoint, especially from like a time restraint sort of thing where it's like you can do as many seasons you want as an animated as long as it's successful.
I want to ask a quick question because I know we need to start talking about the episodes here, Batman. Yeah, no worries. But animated DC movies, like can you top off your, like can you quickly shout your top three, like maybe not in any particular order, but like of all the DC animated movies, like not Batman, not necessarily specifically Batman, but like if you've watched, there's so many of those that I've never watched. Like I've seen Dark Knight Returns, Killing Joke. I've seen a handful here and there, Batman and the Phantasm, and I've seen other movies. But like if you had to pick like just three that jump out to mind when someone would ask you like your favorite DC animated movies, do you have a couple that you could rattle off for me?
I should have prepared more to quote Scott Pilgrim, be like, it's kind of a big question. I would off the rim, I'd say Under the Red Hood, I think is a solid animated movie.
Is that Jensen Ackles Batman? I can't remember either.
I should know.
He's in it somewhere. I just can't remember. Sorry.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of the most Justice League Dark. I had a good series that I don't think a lot of people saw, but I really appreciated it. Was a great
Guillermo del Toro saw it and he said, "Hell yeah, brother."
It was the exact quote. "Hell yeah, brother."
Let's see if I have to do a third one. Dark Knight Returns is such a good series that when they did the animated, I was skeptical, and then they did a lot of justice for it, where in a lot of scenes it's frame for frame. If you enjoy that comic and haven't seen the animated, recommend it.
Sure. Batman Ninja.
It's a two-parter.
You know what? They did a different style on it. I love when they try a different style of animation.
Yeah.
I'm never going to knock that. Like, if you want to be expressive, you know, David Bowie didn't make good music by, like, doing the same thing over and over.
Damn, so, fucking knowledge on this pod right now. Mark dropping the existential knowledge right here.
Well, if you want good animation, you got to try new things, you know. Yeah, as much as I would love to watch Batman the Animated Series style animation for forever into the future, like I'd totally be on board. You have to try things like Batman Ninja to expand the audience, expand the universe and the storytelling. So
yeah,
it doesn't rank high on my list of animated films, but I enjoyed it for what it was.
Definitely.
That's a good question though. It also gives me some things to watch, because I don't think it's been a while since I've seen some of those. I looked it up, by the way. Jensen Ackles played Jason Todd in Under the Red Hood, but Bruce Greenwood played Batman in that episode.
No shit, or in Bruce Greenwood, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty cool.
He was Batman?
Neil That's Patrick awesome. Harris was Dick Grayson in that, which is just awesome.
No way, really?
Little MPH action, sure. Yeah, get into it.
Now I gotta watch that. That's did you be really hard for me to separate.
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it made me want to think of this one. Did you see the New Frontier adaptation?
I don't think I did. No, okay. Not yet.
New Frontier is a Darwin Cook Justice League book that expands pretty much the first 40 years of DC history, but it's set around the political events that happen in the real world, like World War II and, you know, the Korean War and the nuclear bomb and stuff like that, while splicing in the debuts of all of these DC heroes like the Flash and Batman into like real world American history, which is pretty cool. So it's like Forrest Gump Justice League almost, but you know, that's probably a bad elevator pitch. But the movie is like animated exactly the same way, which is really cool.
So I have seen New Frontier.
Yeah.
And yeah. I watched it twice. Once I just got my wisdom teeth out.
Oh god.
And I had like a bunch of Batman movies lined up. I was like, this is what I want to do when I come home. And yeah. I was like, that movie was terrible. I was like throwing popcorn at the screen. And then I watched it when I wasn't right after my wisdom teeth, and I was like, actually this is really good. But to your point, it's also animated very differently, and the storytelling is really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, with that being said, I think it's time to talk about these episodes, because we got three good ones to discuss tonight. I'm glad Mark is able to join us for some, you know, pretty heavy hitters, quote unquote. There're definitely some memorable ones for sure, and monumental in the canon of the show itself. But for those of you that are listening right now, if you haven't watched the episodes for the week, our episodes are Harley and Ivy, and then a two-parter called Shadow of the Bat. So go check out those three episodes, pause this pod, come back, and then we'll dive on in. Gentlemen, you guys ready to start your engines?
Vroom, vroom.
Vroom, vroom. By the way, before we go on, real quick, one more derail. I saw Steve recently, and his Christmas present to me was Fast and the Furious Hot Wheels, which is just amazing. Yeah.
Which car did he give you?
It's a three-pack. It's got Dom's Charger, Brian's, the blue
Nissan
one.
Nissan Skyline.
Yep. And then I forget the third one, but it's pretty cool.
Fucking A, Cotton. That's awesome.
Anyway, our first episode is Harley and Ivy. Harley and Ivy is written by the legendary Paul Dini and directed by Boyd Kirkland. Zach, you got some Boyd Kirkland check-ins for us?
I do. Boyd Kirkland, responsible for a lot of animated stuff. We've talked to his name has come up multiple times since we've been doing this show. He was an art department lead for Batman Mask of the Phantasm. He was in the art department for X-Men Evolution. He was the animation department head for Batman and Freeze Sub-Zero, and he was responsible for 14 episodes of Batman the Animated Series in many different like aspects. So he was not just like a singular like director or anything like that. Like he was involved in the show in a lot of different ways from 1992 until 1995. He's directed some episodes that we've talked about, such as It's Never Too Late, Joker's Favor, Pretty Poison, Appointment in Crime Alley. We got Cat Scratch Fever, Terror in the Night, Joker's Wild, Harley and Ivy, and some other ones sprinkled in there as well. And he'll go on to work on seasons 2, 3, and 4 of animated series.
For sure. And Paul Dini, a person who needs no introduction. I feel like we've been talking about him a lot lately as he became more of a, you know, in the writer's room at all times kind of guy on the show, it seems. And especially as Harley Quinn starts to evolve into a more independent character starting in this episode, actually, he will come in to write a lot more than he had been. We've talked about a lot of his classics already, Mark, like Laughing Fish and The Man Who Killed Batman were ones that we've done recently. But obviously he's a big component of the Mask of the Phantasm script as well, notably the Joker stuff. So pretty cool. I'm excited to talk about this episode because this is essentially, before we dive into the plot, like the elevator pitch that they use for the Harley Quinn animated show, which I don't know if you have watched that at all, but first season's pretty similarly aligned with what the plot of this episode of television is, which is pretty funny to see them adapt that. Obviously, it's a lot more centered on adult humor in that show, but
that show's got two cool. seasons now.
I think it's got four.
Four? Oh my god!
Yeah, holy I think crap. A fourth episode or a fourth season came out recently.
No shit. Okay.
Yeah, and then so before we talk about the plot of this episode, we talk about all the title cards, Mark. So we just kind of give our thoughts week to week, title card by title card. We, you know, in the first episode, we wanted to make sure that we put some light on these because people obviously, A, worked very hard, but B, Batman the Animated Series, Looney Tunes, all these classic animation shows have really cool like intros and, you know, things that are very memorable images or sometimes not so memorable. But what did you guys think of this one for Harley and Ivy specifically?
It's okay.
I was confused by it, if I could be honest. At first I was like kind of tilting my head around, you know, there's a lot of you got like a strand of red hair and then yeah.
I literally think
Harley Quinn hat.
Yeah, I really just think that it's nothing else. It's just an abstract sort of like representation of the colors, the palettes, yeah. and the signature things of the hero. You got Poison Ivy's red hair. You got Harley Quinn's little hat with the bow. You got each one of their like kind of costume colors and the spades there. Like, I really think that's all it is. It's just like somebody put Harley and Ivy in a blender and turned it on turbo, and then this is what came out of it. What do you think of this one, Mark?
I mean, I can't imagine capturing the depth of this episode in a title card. So with what they were working with, I mean, it's Harley and Ivy and they're both there. So happy to see it.
Yeah.
I do like what you said, Zach, how it captures the color like components of them for sure. I think that's I didn't catch that the first time exactly. Obviously, I could see the colors. But
like, if you remove the text, if you just removed Harley and Ivy, the white text, and you just had that, it would look like something that might be in the Contemporary Arts Museum.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of like,
then the Joker can come in and finger paint on it,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. It's like, this red Marty represents the frailty and fragility of human
I'd rather like this one, Bob. Why don't you leave it alone? $1 bill. All right. Well, I'm going to give us our little two-minute plot synopsis here, so bear with me. We're going to catch us up to speed, and then we'll talk about our thoughts on the episode. Batman is in hot pursuit of Harley Quinn and the Joker. As they speed through Gotham's streets, Harley is reluctantly taking orders from Joker. Amidst all of the Joker's berating, Harley is able to outmaneuver Batman, and somehow they escape. Back at their lair, Joker and Harley have a big fight in front of their gang. Consumed with rage over failed jobs recently, Joker kicks Harley to the curb. She vows to pull the biggest heist ever to show them who's on top. While Harley attempts to steal a large gem at a museum, a security alarm is tripped by none other than Poison Ivy. They both cut short their intro since the security guards are on their trail, and Harley uses one of the plant toxins that Ivy was stealing to mask their escape, and they drive off into the night. Back at Ivy's, Harley is given an antidote to Poison Ivy's toxic abode so that they can work together, and Ivy then asks Harley why she puts up with the Joker, to which Harley replies that it's all for love. Harley comes to the realization, though, that the Joker may be using her, and Ivy promises to help Harley discover her independence. Together, Harley and Ivy quickly become new queens of crime in Gotham. Harley still misses her relationship with the Joker, however. On the other hand, Joker seems to be doing terribly without Harley, not aware that she hasn't come back to him like before and is off on her own doing her own crime stuff now. After Harley disintegrates some pervert's car with the bazooka, Batman finds tire residue with toxic waste on it, which he'll use to track the ladies back to their hideout. Harley calls Joker to let her know that she's okay, and Batman arrives at Ivy's right after. They trap Batman with these and launch him into a toxic waste heap slash puddle. So there's tons of those in Gotham. Joker and his gang find Harley and Ivy's place, and Joker says he's come to collect what belongs to him, but he mostly means the money. There's a three-team battle between Joker's gang, Harley and Ivy, and Batman, and that commences and gets off to a hot start. Harley and Ivy are able to get away, leaving the Joker to deal with Batman. Old Bats subdues Joker after a massive explosion, and the ladies are caught by none other than police detective Renee Montoya, whom they have evaded all episode long. Joker, Harley, and Ivy are all locked back up in Arkham, where Harley is still hopeful to rekindle her romance with Joker. And that is your synopsis for Harley and Ivy. I'm gonna go to Zach first. Zach, what were your thoughts on the episode? Is this the first time you'd seen this one?
It has to be either the first or second time. I had some vague memories of this episode, but really it felt like a fresh experience watching it for the first time. I think that it's most likely is my favorite, most likely my first time seeing it. If I saw any of these clips, I think it might've been like back in college and we might've been drunk. So,
or like on a YouTube video
or on a YouTube about, video yeah. or a clip show or something like that. Yeah. So it was my first time experiencing it. I really liked the episode. I think that the concept is undeniably intriguing, like the idea of like
Thelma and Louise Batman.
Thelma and Louise meets yeah. Batman, girl boss crime syndicate just fucking tearing Gotham apart. And yeah, it commences it climaxes in a really cool way with like the three-way fight between like the different sects or whatever. It's like that idea in itself is super, super cool. It's like the Battle of the Five Armies, but it's make it Gotham. So I dug
invoke
it.
That movie, please.
Well, I'm more so invoking Tolkien.
I know. Total chaos. Yeah,
total chaos. But it's cool. Yeah, I like the episode quite a bit. I really liked all the stuff in the middle with like the Ivy and fucking what's her name. Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn are at it again, and they're robbing a bank, and there's the spinning all the newspapers and shit. Yeah,
like The Godfather. Yeah.
Yeah.
That shows all the progression of time. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. It's like, who knows how long this crime spree was going on. You have to imagine this is probably one of Batman's worst jobs at catching people in terms of the history of the show. They've gotten away with it for a while.
This Batman's off watching fucking Succession season 6 or whatever. He's like, he's got shit going on at the Batcave. Alfred's like, oh, we should Master Bruce. Shouldn't we go out and stop this girl boss crime
Those
syndicate?
Ladies are getting into it again. He's like, sisters are doing it for themselves, Alfred. It's all good.
Yeah, Batman's just a proponent of, he's an ultimate feminist. He wants to see these ladies go out and kick some ass. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. Yeah. But I'm glad you finally got to kind of like watch it under the pretenses of this review show so that we could discuss it here. Mark, did you have any first initial thoughts and fun things that you prepared that you'd like to share or ask us?
Yeah, I do have a lot of thoughts. I'll try to keep it as brief as I can.
No, do your thing. I think we'll just kind of like chime in depending on what you're asking about and produce a conversation from there.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think this is a great representation of a dark topic without being overwhelmingly depressing. I mean, it's right there that Harley's clearly in an abusive relationship with the Joker. But to make it appropriate for kids' TV is an incredible thing, because there's no part in the episode where you feel like really sad or depressed about it. They kind of throw in enough jokes to make it all right. And then
they also show that he's a complete loser without her, you know what I mean? It's like which helps kind of feed into that,
right?
And I'm pretty sure in the history of the show there's never a physical altercation. I mean, obviously that would probably be caught by standards and practices, but until we actually finish our in review, I can't recall off the top of my head, but I know that that is a proponent of the Mad Love comic is a little bit of physical abuse there too.
So I mean, with that too, another idea is just how supportive Ivy is to Harley.
Yeah.
I think that their relationship here and just the like voice actor's chemistry, it creates this friendship that has existed throughout all of animation, all of comics going forward, because obviously Harley Quinn not existing before this show, you're going to develop the character as you go on. And without this episode, I don't think that you see a lot of Harley Ivy comics at all.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah. I would argue that the modern animation show might not exist without this episode being so good. I think there's a lot of aspects of that show that show up in this particular episode. Moving on, I've got a random thought, which is, how many museums are there in the animated series? I'd love to know.
About as many as there are toxic wastes and wharfs, it seems, you know?
Correct.
I was going to say, they say there's a bar for every person in Milwaukee. I think there's a museum for every person in Gotham.
I like in the Arkham City games, though, where there's just like, you know, there's like multiple different types of like Museum of Natural History, Museum of Marine History. It's like all kinds of different stuff.
Yeah.
It's fun. It gives you an environment to fool around in. Yeah.
It's all new, but like Gotham's got to have more museums per capita than like any other city.
For sure. For sure. You have to think of Gotham City in the DC world is probably like it's got all of the world's high class museums combined.
Correct. All right. So beyond that random thought, and if anybody knows exactly how many museums there are, just email to Radiovania.
Look at this guy.
No. Yeah. You're hired.
Plug it away. Plug.
That would be great. I'd love to do a content analysis on it and watch every episode and count the museums. That's very tempting. Also, the condemned buildings, high level of those, yep. But jumping forward to the three, what they call frat boys in the
yeah.
in the script, they're actually voice acted by Bruce Timm.
Very cool.
The background supervisor, Eric Radomski, and then Ted Blackman. So I think it was smart of them to take those voice roles of guys who are like clearly being inappropriate.
The image, I'm going to go ahead and say it now. We always talk about our favorite animation show. This isn't my exact favorite from the episode, but the far panned out shot of her just blasting that car off with the bazooka made me laugh. Just like
it's awesome.
Way too much.
it's like there's some jokes in these old shows
it's
that like
Tarantino.
Yeah, there's some jokes that hold up. Like there's some jokes that like man, it's like it's kids humor. It doesn't really necessarily, but the comedic timing of the silence of that between the silence of her shooting the rocket and the car blowing up, it's like it's brilliant. It's a beautiful moment.
It's awesome. And it's great to see Harley stand up for herself. And that's kind of like a show that she has the potential to break away from the Joker. It's all there. She just kind of needs to get through it. Going back to it, I found a nice little quote about Arlene Sorkin, which, by the way, I don't know if you've talked about on the pod, but her
we
recent
did.
Passing. Okay.
Yeah, we did. RIP to a legend, for sure. Yeah.
For sure.
So obviously an amazing voice actress in creating the this character, and basically being the model for this character is incredible.
Forever. Yeah. I mean, you got Margot Robbie, one of the best actors right now working and possibly of all time, that is using that blueprint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just great. I can't say enough about that. So I will, I'll leave it there. Is that obviously just awesome to see that character. But she had said, at least in one interview, that this is one of her favorite episodes that she worked on.
Yeah,
cool. So to just know that is cool. And then she also talked a little bit about this episode and why she thinks that Harley has the potential to love the Joker where other people don't. And this is a quote from...
Besides Batman, you mean?
yeah, we
different
want to
different kinds of love, but they need each other. Yeah.
In the book, Batman, the Animated, Arlene shares her thoughts saying that everybody else sees the Joker's laugh, only Harley ever sees him cry.
Mm.
It's the only reason she stays with him. She knows that he can be vulnerable and really sees his true self. So it's cool to see that the people acting this out had a good understanding of the characters, which is why the performances are just so undeniably good. And then just also Ivy's and Harley's relationship in this is super fun. Them being in the ranch in what basically looks like a weird little like post-apocalyptic suburb.
They're in the Wally Village, essentially. It's a toxic waste dump, which is why she has to get that vaccine when they first go back there, is because she's like, it's toxic to live here, but here's a vaccine that you can take, which is just
and hey, Harley, I sympathize. That's how I sound every time I have to go to the fucking doctor. It's like
I think Ivy would have cured COVID pretty quickly if she liked
people, right?
Well, that's a good point. That's true. She'd probably want us all to die so that plants could rule the world.
I think poison ivy would cure me from depression.
I think across the episode, obviously there's a less than subtle feminist tone to it, which is great.
Totally.
And part of me wonders if being in that like ranch in the suburb is like a metaphor for women being in a world that's out to like destroy them from the outside, being more of a difficult place to live for them than it would be for other people.
Damn.
And I think that it's not beyond the writers of this show to have that be why they're in the spot that they are.
Yeah. No, and when they trap Batman to drop him into the toxic waste dump, they surround him on that table with all signs of female oppression in like the modern society. There's like a vacuum cleaner and a broom and like kitchen stuff that's like all like tied up to it, and they're like making him into an like essentially like a fucked up art sculpture that they're just gonna drop into this vat of acid, you know, or just like toxic sludge. But yeah, I mean, great, definitely great like analysis of of thematic moments for sure within the episode too. And I think, you know, I think one that is rich with a lot of that stuff too, because like you mentioned, a lot of it is very overt. And I think what makes it timeless is the stuff in this show that you can kind of like analyze and dive into over time.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I would like to know, like, do either of you guys know, because you're more dialed into the animated series than I am, like Paul Dini, has he ever been interviewed about this episode? Like, I mean,
yeah, like, I'm sure he has.
Yeah. I would love to hear his like thoughts on like this being such a, because this is like a, you got to put yourself back in like, when did this episode come out? It was 93.
Yes, let me pull up the exact date.
January 18th, 1993 was the original air date. So, like, think about it. Like, 1993, an animated cartoon. Like, at this point, it was like you brought up the allusion to Thelma and Louise, right? Like, that was, like, a different, you know, that's still, like, a culturally, like, a important symbol of, like, you know, a movie or like a franchise or an IP or whatever that's led primarily by women, featuring strong women, featuring women doing actual things and not just like, you know, being side characters, being pushed to the side. It's like actually like focusing in on them as people and then like as having their own characters and their own character arcs. And the idea that like fucking Paul Dini was doing this shit in 93 is like, it's pretty cool. Like it's cool. I would love to hear what his thoughts are on like this episode now and like what it's spawned on to be with Harley Quinn and her roles in film and with the Harley and Ivy show. Like it's pretty fucking important. Like this episode is very important. I think Mark's, you know, analysis is 100% spot on. It's like, you know, this episode means a lot to a lot of people, I'm sure. Like I would love to hear what, you know, women Batman fans have to say about this episode. So yeah. It sucks that we're all just a bunch of dudes on here.
I know. Yeah. Really dropped the ball there. But I would agree though that the popularity of this episode and having it be such a fan favorite, you know, as well as fan, like a creator favorite, as it were.
Yeah.
Led to a lot of stuff within the DC universe, both in comics and in the cartoons and movies. Like we don't get Birds of Prey without this. We don't get Gotham City Sirens without this, you know, like female team up, or whether it's villains or heroes, you know, there's an episode later on in this show, or maybe it's in the Superman animated series, Mark, I can't remember, called Girls Night Out, which is female villains versus female heroes, which is Batgirl and Supergirl versus like Ivy, Harley, and I think what's her name, the Superman villain with lightning, anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah, but like I think it's really cool, and it sets up a lot of stuff, and it just continues to kind of display both the importance of the Harley Quinn character, which was created in this show, as well as its creator Paul Dini with his out of the box ideas for episodes that become almost like its own cult following, you know, where it's like, it's a Dini episode, it's gonna be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I did have a Dini quote prepared because I'm a nerd. he did say, this is a direct quote, "It was fun to give Poison Ivy a friend because she's never had one." Talking about how she's have mind control people and she's had underlings, but giving her a friend with Harley is a way to show kind of like her humanity. And it's definitely like women uplifting women very unsubtly, that I think is just, he knew what he was doing. He thought it was cool, and he used the word fun, you know.
Yeah,
it is a fun episode for sure.
It has such a fun tone. I mean, it's like, again, like I keep saying it, but Thelma and Louise, it's got that kind of like this like Devil May Care. This, it's got a, such a great attitude to it. This is one of my, we'll get to the rankings later. I like this episode a lot, but I've got a question for both of you. I know we're, you know, this episode's running long on discussion, longer than we typically do, but I think that's totally fine. I still got more to talk about.
We're here all night,
baby. We're here until the break of dawn, baby.
We're talking about Batman.
We're talking about Batman.
It is what it is. It takes time.
So with Mark kicking it off, kind of talking about, you know, obviously, like, one of the things that you think about watching this episode is, like, you know, like, you put it, Mark, really well, I think, like, the idea of, like, making this episode for kids. And we talk about this a lot of the times where it's like, you know, these creators are making things for kids. There's certain episodes in this fucking show, though, that are so dark and so, like, they present themes that are really, really effed up when you actually think about it. And the theme of this episode, or like one of the like side themes, is that abusive relationship between Harley and the Joker. And I want to know if this episode made you guys any at all excited or interested or curious about how they're going to handle that in Joker 2, because we're officially in 2024. Joker Folie à Deux comes out apparently this year. And it's a, thank you very much. It's a, you know, it's a story. Lady Gaga's playing Harley Quinn. Joaquin Phoenix is coming back as the Joker. It's a musical. You're going to play off of years and years and years of content and written word and comics and movies and all this stuff between Joker and Harley. I kind of want to know from you guys, because you guys are dialed into Batman so intimately. Like, what do you think about this episode drawing in, like, being an inspiration? Like, do you think the movie's going to take any inspiration from the show at all? Like, I think, yeah, I'm curious to what you guys think.
I guess I can start. I'm just always, like, from this episode and from Batman the Animated Series, even as a kid, I just always disliked the relationship of Joker and Harley. You know, like, it's clearly an abusive relationship. And I root for Harley to just get out of there and get rid of the Joker in so many situations. So the fact that there's so many fans of Harley and Joker together always surprises me. Like, when people do couples costumes at Comic-Con, I'm like, are you all right? That's just my opinion. So it's hard for me to break away from that, just because it's such a dark topic that, like, I can't see a lot of fun in it. But any Batman movie, any character movie, you want to see those characters in kind of like their best form. And I root for them to do well. So,
yeah.
Big fan of musicals. So I think that you could get some good songs out of it. But
Gaga for sure. That's gonna be great.
Oh yeah.
I can't wait.
I hope it's represented that their relationship is like a bad thing, because it's definitely not something to aspire to.
It will be. It has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be represented that way. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, so my thoughts on the Joker movie, I don't think I talked to Mark about this very much, but that Joker, that representation of the Joker, he's not a criminal mastermind, and I honestly don't think he has, I wouldn't say he doesn't have an evil bone in his body, but until the end, he doesn't really have any malicious intent. He's just kind of like bobbling his way through really horrible circumstances after the other. I actually wouldn't be surprised if they did some role reversal and Harley's the abusive one in the relationship to the Joker.
Interesting.
Switch things up a little bit on old Arthur Fleck.
They could see some backlash for that, where they're like, oh, we made the woman the abusive one in this relationship?
I mean, backlash, do they really care about that? Joker movie is pretty dark as it is. You know, he like drowns his mom and shoots people on a train. So yeah, we'll see.
I think the first one is clearly a commentary on mental health, or at least that's what Todd Phillips has said that it is. I think that the second one might be a commentary on, like, you know, bad relationships, or like bad, not just romantic relationships, but just like people that get together that shouldn't be together, whether that's a toxic friend or a toxic relationship or, you know, whatever that is. I think that that's going to be what it is.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if, like, they're going to really play the sympathy, not the sympathy card necessarily, but make Joker more evil in the second one and make Harley more of the protagonist. Like, that's what I almost wonder that the sequel's going to be.
Harley's gone through such a big, like, hero's journey of late. I feel like that you're most likely right with that. I mean, she's part of the Suicide Squad now, saving the world from Starro the Conqueror. So there's nothing that lady can't do. All respects go to Harleen Quinzel. We love her. All right. Well, so before we wrap up our discussion on this one, Mark, we always talk about our favorite like single cell of animation or visual moment. Did you have one prepared?
Yes, I did. Basically just Harley blowing up the car.
Yeah.
it's great. It's funny.
It's a good one.
It's exactly what her character would do, and it's just like a giant rocket launcher in the car is so funny to me.
Yeah. Zach?
Yeah, if it's not the rocket launcher, see, but specifically I like the moment where it comes into frame and she's looking at it. That's
she's
like the
she
very
like
Tarantino
pulls it out
shot.
She's
yeah,
like, I got
like,
this for you.
Yeah, it very much gave me like the same. It's like, oh, you got to dream a little bit of bigger, darling, is from like Inception. But if it's not that, I actually really like the shot of Batman coming in with the gas mask. Like the silhouette Batman with the
I'm
gas
glad
mask.
You brought this up.
I was like, I got that toy. I was like, I bet I had that toy when I was a fucking kid.
I love the Kevin Conroy delivery of hello, ladies. As he jumps in the window. It's so funny.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that sequence is really hilarious. And they just like immediately catch him with this giant vine. And they're like, he just is down immediately. It's like, wow, way to go, yeah. Man. You didn't think that through.
That's hilarious, man. You got to get that as like your ringtone or so, or like
hello,
text tone.
Ladies.
Hello, ladies. No, that's funny as hell, man. What
my
was
favorite,
yours?
Yeah, mine's like kind of like a series of sequential images. I love the newspaper montage. I think all the different newspaper headlines are just hilarious. Where it's like, new queen's a crime, you know, and how it like transitions into the guys reading the newspaper while Joker's trying to find his pants and stuff like that. You know, it's just so funny. He's like, no one's feeding the dogs. It's like, what's going on? Like
shit,
that is all amazing comedy stuff from Mark Hamill, which I think is just, you know, this is definitely a ladies led episode, but he's still giving his aces.
Yeah, I totally forgot to bring that up too. But like, I love the call, the whole tracking call sequence where she's like, did you miss me, Puddin', or whatever? And he's like looking at a mirror of himself while he's like on the phone with Harley. Like, this is great. It's so funny. He's just like, he could give two shits, and then he's like got this little tracker disc that he's doing the thing on. It prints out a receipt of her location.
I was wondering how that worked too, but you know, we don't want to
we
dive
don't question,
too deep into
we
how
don't
that works.
The tech in these fucking,
I will say that going like after the car scene, there's a scene where just Batman steps out and the music happens.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, Batman's in this episode too.
I was thinking that too. It's like a solid 10 minutes before we see him again in a 22-minute episode. It's just like, oh yeah, that guy. It's his animated series. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, Mark, each week and each episode that we do this, we rank it. We have a master list. I send it to you as a document. You might disagree with it, but this is what Zach and I have put together so far. And all that we're really going to do is kind of do a little bit of a discussion on where we think this goes. So for the listeners, the way we break it down is it's a tier system. We have our S tiers at the top, followed by our A tiers, our B tiers, our tier C, and the it's never too late tier. And then we have the tier basement. And so that's the breakdown, and we're never changing the titles. So it's what it is.
Oh my god. It gets me every time. It's better because we've had a bit of a like a Christmas break, and then I came back to this list. I'm like,
you
what
forgot
the
about
fuck
it
is this?
Yeah, I love the B tier to tier C is just like a little bit of like just the different naming conventions cracks me up. Mark, we made the it's never too late tier because Zach could never remember what it's never too late is about. And so we just put it in its own tier so that we wouldn't have to worry about ranking above or below it. Zach, what is this never too late about?
Well, joke's on you because now now I've come up with a fucking mnemonic device. Every time I hear it's never too late, the first thing I think is priest, 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 priest. It's the episode with the fucking priest in it, isn't it?
Yes, and his brother who's a crime boss. Yeah.
Yeah, that part I don't remember, but I remember the priest.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Mark, you can take a look at this kind of a little bit.
Yeah, can you guys see Mark could see the list. Yeah, so I don't know. Does anybody have any strong opinions on where they would rank this episode?
I think it's definitely in the S tier for me. I just don't know as to where we should place it. And we are, you know, feel free to give your own personal thoughts, but we have to all come to a consensus because that's the hardest part about podcasting.
That is the hardest part. Mark, I mean, looking at this list, Mark, I know that you haven't been watching all these with us, but like, does the S tier, because I also agree with John, I think that this should go S tier, but where, I mean, like looking at the our number 12 in the S tier, The Clock King, I Am the Night is the top of A tier. Do you remember these episodes? Do you have any like frame of reference for like where you would put this? Does it make sense in the S tier? Like, where are you at?
Yeah, no, I recognize the episodes. It's been a while since I've seen some of them, but I definitely think that what I'm seeing on the top, it works. I would rank it high. I mean, I don't know your guys' tier system too well since I just saw it right now. But I would agree with, I mean, at least A tier, but probably S for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we can all agree it's in the S tier. Yeah. So, Zach, I feel like for me, this isn't obviously a Joker episode. This is definitely a Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy episode. I think it's definitely better than 8. I think it's better than the Joker's favorite. Joker's Ooh. Favorite, Mark, is the one where Joker blackmails that guy into helping him over like 10 years. And then the guy moves to Ohio. And then Joker fights him and makes him come back to open a door for him. And that's like the whole bit. That's kind of where I lean. But I don't know if... I don't know.
That's where I was vacillating originally, where I was like, yeah. I think that this might be like Joker's favor is so good.
Yeah, I just think that the Joker's favor, there are parts of the Joker's favor that I find, you know, like it's obviously amazing. It's an amazing episode of television, but there are parts of it that aren't quite as memorable for me because that guy is the protagonist that this episode has for me personally. I don't want to spend too much time arguing about it though either.
No.
But what I was going to say is that I don't think I would put it higher than Perchance to Dream, which is one of my favorite character studies of Bruce Wayne, the character. So it's somewhere between like 6, 8, 9 range for me. You know, that's where I would kind of land.
Mark, do you have any thoughts here?
Can't help you on this one. I'm gonna leave it to you and John to hash out.
I think that's fair.
So originally I was gonna say better than Christmas with the Joker, but below Joker's favor. But I think I just have more of a, I like this episode. I like the themes that it presents. Joker's favor is a little bit more original to me. I like the idea of the like the pettiness of the Joker, like this episode, like the Bonnie and Clyde, like the you know, that whole like aspect. It's very, very cool. The episode takes a lot of great ideas and kind of iterates on them and presents them in a really interesting way. I just find more entertainment value out of Joker's favor. But if you want to notch it a slot above it, I'm not going to argue. Like I definitely don't think that I would put it anywhere in the top 5. I think that like anywhere from Perchance to Dream down to 9, I think is appropriate for this episode.
Okay. Why don't we do the new number? Dreams and Darkness is really good too.
Dreams and Darkness is the
Batman is locked up in Arkham.
And that's the Scarecrow one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We like that episode. I like that episode.
I like that.
I don't know if I would put this above that.
Yeah, episode. let's go with 8 then.
All right. So it goes 8. Above Joker's favors, the new number 8.
That's what I would go with.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Right on.
All right. Harley and Ivy, your new number 8. Now we have 13 episodes in the S tier.
Perfect. All right, let's dive into our next episode here. We have Shadow of the Bat Part 1, written by Bryn Stevens and directed by Frank Power. Frank Power, familiar name for Batman the Animated Series.
Super duper ooper familiar name.
Googling it really quickly.
No. Got to pull it up here. He's been represented in a lot of stuff. This dude, man, he's been all over the map. Directed Spawn, directed the Men in Black, the animated series, X-Men Evolution, Charlie's Angels, the animated series. I don't know if you ever realized that there was a Charlie Angels animated series. He directed 16 episodes of Batman, the animated series, seasons 1, 2, and 4. Some of the episodes that we've discussed, Be a Clown, Vendetta, Prophecy of Doom, Mad as a Hatter, The Cape and Cowl Conspiracy, The Underdwellers, and
also not great.
I've got Batman in my basement.
That's most of the tier basement right there. But
also Tiger Tiger. This guy also directed Tiger Tiger.
But he also is now the director of Shadow of the Bat, which is not in that category. So nope. That's nice.
You did it, Frankie.
Yeah, Frankie. We love you. Title card here. We got the classic Batman the Animated Series font, which I like that they do that for introducing Batgirl in this episode. I think that's really cool. Otherwise, the background title card part of it, I think, is like kind of like just okay. You know what I mean? But I love whenever I see that font anywhere, like if it's at a train station or something, I just do the Leo and I like see it and I'm like, let's go.
Yeah, it's a classic classic Art Deco font, which is like the main artistic inspiration behind most of Batman the Animated Series. My favorite building in the world, maybe one of my favorite places in the world, is the Union Terminal in Cincinnati, Ohio. Famous Art Deco building. They have that exact font for like every door and everything inside the
Mark, have you been to the Union Terminal in Cincy?
I have not.
Dude, I don't want
to. Family vacation.
It's the Hall of Justice.
Yeah.
That's what the Hall of Justice is based on. It's got the giant semicircle. It's amazing. Every time we drive by it, I'm just like, hey, there it is.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Mark, did you have any thoughts on our title card here?
Well, I just looked it up so then I could see it again.
Yeah, I put it in the document too.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I like it. I like the Art Deco. I'm a big fan of that style.
I will say this is the first time I wanted to talk about not the image as much as the title card is when they first play Shirley Walker's Batgirl theme that is going to be like persistent in the next two episodes. So I think that is cool and notable as well for this.
For sure.
All right. 2-minute plot synopsis. Thank you guys for hanging in. Love talking about Batman. Here we go. Crime boss Rupert Thorne and his men fall into a trap laid by the GCPD. Batman hunts Thorne down and hangs him up to be found by Commissioner Gordon and new Deputy Commissioner Gil Mason. Bruce and Alfred speculate on who Gil Mason's informant might be since they've been able to take down three gang bosses in the last few months. Barbara Gordon practices gymnastics and catches up with her father in their home, and Gil Mason arrives at Jim's house and arrests Commissioner Gordon for accepting bribes from Rupert Thorne. Gil and Bullock, that's Detective Harvey Bullock, that is, put together a rally to show public support for Jim Gordon, and Barbara hopes that Batman will attend. Bats is investigating Gordon's things in the evidence room and finds a canceled plane ticket to Rio. No extraditions there. He then shoots a two-way radio call into Jim Gordon's cell. It's like this sweet Batman shuriken that's also a radio, which is dope. Yeah,
tight.
He tells Gordon that there's an offshore bank receipt and a plane ticket that are definitely forged and not by Thorne's guys. Jim asks Batman to check in on Barbara. Batman refuses to appear at the rally, but Barbara vows that Batman will be there one way or the other. At a rundown hideout, a familiar voice commands one of his goons to get in place at the rally. It's a very quick scene, but notable. Batman goes undercover as Matches Malone, this will be a fun one to talk about, to investigate a crime syndicate, and Robin agrees to go to the rally. However, at the rally, there is already a quote-unquote Batman. It's Barb in disguise. Suddenly, a car drives by and unloads Tommy guns on the rally. Robin chases after Barbara and rips her mask off in the end to reveal the red hair underneath. A sight that is also captured by the news that'll make a big public announcement. Barbara and Robin dispatch the thugs mostly, but one gets away. Back at the manor, Robin notices on a video recording of the rally that Gil Mason ducked behind the podium just before the gunfire, almost as if he knew it was coming. At the GCPD, Barbara is able to determine the escaped thug's name and appearance. She goes to tell Gil Mason, but the thug is already in his home. At a seedy pool hall, Matches Malone overhears the same thug talking to his boss on the phone about a female bad person, and then he follows this goon back to his boss. Matches attempts to break into the hideout, but he is electrocuted upon entry. When he comes to, he discovers the new pusher in the Gotham gang scene is none other than our friend Two-Face. Great reveal, by the way. That was
so cool.
Matches fails the coin flip test and is knocked out with the butt of a gun. Barbara gears up as Batgirl for the first time, and she is ready to head into the fight against corruption. To be continued. Shadow of the Bat, part one. Started with Zach last time. Mark, what were some of your initial thoughts on the episode?
First of all, awesome to see Batgirl for the first time in the show.
For sure. Yeah. She's been in the show, but only as Barb up until this time. Yes. So very noticeable. Or notable.
It's been a while since I've seen this episode. And when I was watching and she's doing the gymnastics, I was like, what? They've got like a full gym in their house? Like, yeah. She's clearly accepting bribes. And then 2 seconds later, they're like, you're accepting bribes.
And you're like, of course.
It's like, how'd he afford this like full gym in his house? Because they got like a balance beam and everything.
Is it possible, because in the comics, Jim Gordon is obviously split from his wife, Sarah. Is it possible that maybe Sarah's paying child support and Jim is using that to buy Barbara gym equipment?
I don't know. I think it's,
I don't
just
want to
like
dive into that.
The cost of living difference. Like, he can afford to live big as a commissioner, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
But I mean, I was commissioner in Gotham City. How much are you realistically making salary?
Or maybe they just like, maybe they just don't have furniture and it's just like gym stuff, you know?
Tonight I'm sleeping on the pommel horse.
Yeah. So like I said out loud, because me and my wife were watching this together, and I was like, how can they afford all this fancy gym equipment? And then 2 seconds later, they're like, corruption. So there's a question mark there. I think that it's this episode, so I'm sorry if I'm confusing it with
if you did part two a little bit, that's okay.
There's a visual shot where there's two thugs with Tommy guns on the roof.
Yes.
And it's basically the exact same shot as the intro to the show. Yeah.
That's my animation saw.
There it is.
That shot is dope, man. When I saw that shit, I was like, oh, and I had to like rewind it on HBO Max. I was like, that is so cool. I was like, that's some Tarantino shit right there.
Yeah. It's cool. Perfect. I thought it was great. And I really think that it added legitimacy to her as like a Bat character, because it's showing like, hey, not only is she wearing the costume, but she fits. And then also she does a bunch of flips where in the intro, Batman just starts punching people out. So it kind of shows the difference in like, yeah, she might be more agile. She might be more likely to like dodge something where Batman's going to just punch a brick wall.
Yeah.
So it shows the differences in the character right off the bat, which I think is really cool. So those are all the thoughts that I had off the rip.
Right on. Right on. Zach, what did you think of the episode?
I thought it was good. I thought that it kind of meandered at the beginning, which I wasn't feeling the episode right away. Also, I don't know why my brain was all messed up during this episode, but and it kind of snuck into part two as well, because I watched these three back to back to back, and I don't know why, but the last time we did Batman, I think we did the episode with Talia, right? Didn't we do a Talia episode last time?
We did do a Talia episode pretty recently, but more recently we did a Zatanna episode.
Zatanna. Okay, maybe it was the Talia episode, but for some reason, Shadow of the Bat, I was like, okay, here we go. And I had this queued up on HBO. I was like, time to watch some Talia, baby. And so I geared this up and I kept waiting. I was like, where's Talia? It's like, what? Yeah. Where? I was like, why is it taking them so long to get to Talia? So then at the end, when you get that reveal, I was like, oh, it's going to be Talia. And then it's Two-Face. I'm like, dope. Really cool. But where's Talia? And then that confusion kept going to the second part as well. So that was just a mood setter that I was in. But no, the episode is really cool. I like the slow burn to the end. It's like, what's going on? They got this criminal here and they're investigating this here. So it's cool. I don't love the whole we're throwing Jim Gordon in jail subplot. I get that that's a thing that you get when you're the martyr for Batman. But that wasn't my favorite thing. And the payoff to that in the second part, we'll get to that, is interesting to say the least. But the one thing that I really like the episode. I like Barbara Gordon. I like Batgirl. I'm excited to see, talk about episode two as well. But the one thing that I don't love is I'm not her voice actor. She sounds a little too old for the character. And it kind of like there was a bit of a dissonance there for me. And I don't know if you guys felt
Melissa
that at
Gilbert.
All, I don't know if like
Melissa Gilbert only voices Barbara Gordon Batgirl in the animated series proper. When they change to the new Batman Adventures and they change the animation style, I'm pretty sure it becomes Tara Strong, who is like classic animation actress who's been in everything. You know, she's like Laura Bailey and Troy
she's
Baker.
Like the goat. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's fucking Timmy Turner. I mean, Yeah, so that changes and it becomes a little more youthful, but I definitely understand. And for me, I've been playing, the video games are Terra Strong as well. I feel like most of the Barbara Gordon exposure is in that later season of Batman, that I always kind of forget that they're different until I watch the episode. Yeah. It didn't bother me that much. The only thing that I thought was really weird is it's in the second episode, or maybe it's this one, when Gil Mason has the guy visiting his home and she goes to tell him, her eyes get like really wide, but something happened with the cell and one eye was like drifting over a little bit. And that kind of freaked me out for a little bit.
I don't know if I remember seeing that, but that's funny as hell.
Yeah.
It's not that it was bad. It just took me out of it a little bit, where it's like, you sound like you've had a couple of cigarettes. Like, it's not
hey,
that.
Batman.
Hey, Batman, I'm going to go fight crime with you. You want to go out to the streets tonight? It was like, it wasn't that bad, but it was just a little bit more mature than I expect Barbara Gordon to be. Like, I expect her to be like, I don't know. How old is Barbara Gordon? 17? 18?
Supposed to be like in college, typically.
Oh, she in college?
She first becomes
so like
Batgirl.
19,
so her and
20?
Dick are supposed to be around the same age. Yeah.
Gotcha. So well, either way, she sounded like she was about to turn 30.
Well, let me tell you this. Melissa Gilbert, who voiced Batgirl, is Laura Ingalls in Little House on the Prairie. So,
oh my God.
You're calling out a legend right now. That's what I'll say.
No, hey.
I'm just kidding.
No shots at all. I appreciate her. I appreciate her voice acting. I didn't totally jive with me in these two episodes.
Sure.
What did you think?
Oh, I thought this episode was really cool. I've kind of forgot the whole orchestrating the downfall of the police office by getting Gordon in there, and like having Two-Face planting Gil Mason in there felt very like very Dark Knight, the Batman style, sure. Like where they're going to use political corruption to get to their criminal means, essentially. And having Harvey do that, I think, makes the most sense, because as we all know from their background, Harvey and Jim used to work side by side to put a lot of these guys away. So having him like be the one that's coming for him, I think, is actually like really sinister and cool. But I just, for me as a big Batman fan, like, this has Robin, Batgirl, Two-Face, you got Batman dressing up as Matches Malone. Like, it's just got like everything that I want in like a fun adventure that also introduces one of my favorite Bat characters. Like, I love Barbara Gordon. I think she's awesome.
Yeah. I just want to throw in there, I had it written down in my thoughts, but I forgot. This is a Rupert Thorne, like very early on. The first time he appears in comics is in 1977, Detective Comics 469. Nice. And he's a corrupt politician.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's just all there. You know, like nobody believes that Gordon's guilty. Like, as a viewer, immediately you're like, oh man, somebody else is behind it. But the fact that the whole story is political corruption and that they're using actual characters is great. Also, I looked up the cover for that particular comic. I'm going to share it in the file. Love it. It's so good. Hold on.
Yeah. He's old Detective Comics covers are the jam. Good stuff.
I added it at the very bottom there. He's working with a guy named like Professor Phosphorus, who's going to destroy the city with phosphorus.
Oh my God. That's fucking metal, dude. So I'll destroy this city, Batman.
Yeah, phosphorus. Phosphorus is also the basis for Blight in Batman Beyond, which is pretty cool. Great villain.
It's pretty cool.
Damn, I might get that tattooed Derek on Powers. Me. That's fucking sweet.
That is really cool. Well, Zach already mentioned his favorite cell animation. Mine is actually towards the beginning. Unfortunately, it's not Batgirl related, but I just saw it. I thought it was really cool. When Rupert Thorne is like hiding out on the roof, he's like walking around and he's like tries to duck in between this like alcove, and the Batman shadow just like creeps out from behind him. And I just, every time that gets me, it's so cool. That's definitely my favorite.
Did you have a favorite animation cell from this one, Mark?
I think, and again, it's because I watched them like back to back, it was hard to separate them. They made a ton of use of shadows, like taking the name of the episode very literally. Mm-hmm. And there is a scene where Batman shows up, but his shadow is upside down. And because of it, it looks like he's a bat hanging upside down.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, that's so cool.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I love how everything looks on drawn on the black paper too. It just like, it really pops when they do stuff like that.
I'm relishing every moment we have with that, cause I know that that's turning soon. Like, so
what?
Not What's soon, turning? But like, don't they stop doing like drawing on black paper for Batman?
No, they do that like, the whole time. They do that the whole time.
Even until new Batman Adventures?
Mm-hmm. The character designs change. That's the only thing that really changes.
Okay, got it.
Bane goes from having the luchador mask to like a gimp chain around his neck. We'll get there.
We haven't seen Bane yet. Have we seen Bane?
No, we have not seen Bane yet.
Okay.
We have not seen Bane yet.
Bane!
I am Bane! I will break you. All
right. Can we just real quick, but because I like the episode a lot, but is this the best ending to a two-parter that we've had so far?
That's a good question.
The subtle reveal, the shadowy room, the smoky exterior, the lighting and the shadows, the creeping up, the whole slow build of the episode leading up until boom, you got him Two-Face in the flesh. There he is right there. I thought it was hype as shit. Like he shows up.
Well, the episode ends with Batgirl though in the suit. That's the end of the two parter.
That's right. It does end right there. Yeah.
That Two Face moment is awesome, but that's not the last thing you see. Damn, so it just depends. Like, are you talking about right before it says to be continued?
Yeah, I don't know why, but in my brain,
my favorite is still Two Face Part One, where he turns to look at the camera and the lightning strikes, and you see him.
Damn.
That's
still got to be number one.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, in my brain, I remembered this episode ending with the shotgun because it hits him and it cuts to black. And I thought that it said to be continued after that, but Batgirl gets dressed up after that.
You didn't hear my synopsis? Barbara son gears up bitch. As Batgirl for the first time.
Well, son of a bitch, there it is.
Yep, there you go. But it is, I mean, it is a really good hype.
It's a cool.
So it's like Batman is undercover and not in a good position right now. Dick Grayson is currently trying to figure out what Gil Mason's up to, and Barbara's taking matters into her own hands. Commissioner Gordon's locked up. It's like the Empire Strikes Back, man. It's great. Everything's all messed up.
Here's another thing I will say, because I know that my opinions on Robin have been a little bit up and down this entire pod.
I was going to bring this up later because Mark loves Dick Grayson.
I think that this is the best. This episode is the best Robin we've had so far.
Interesting. This episode or like this two-parter?
I mean, sure, the two-parter in general, but I just think that he's like, he's very direct. He's not very jokey. Like, I thought that the episodes that they've used Robin so far have been like, it's not the Robin that I connect with. I understand that it's a Robin that a lot of people like. And now knowing that Mark likes him, I'm excited to hear what his opinions are. But it's like, you know, like the Robin that I've never really connected with, like the jokey, sidekick, lighthearted Robin. Like, that's never been my thing. So, like, I like that this episode is just much more straightforward. He's there. He's a passionate person. He's a member of the team. He's there to do a job. He's working with everybody. It's like, I just like that he's, like, supplementary.
He's kind of left to his own devices, too, by the end of it. Like, the second episode will spoil it a little bit, obviously. It's been out for years. But, like, it picks up with him and Alfred trying to figure out what's going on. You know what I mean? So, it's like, he's not worried about Batman. He's like, Batman will come back whenever he wants. I'm just going to keep going on with this case here.
I think in this show, it seems to me that they started off with more of, like, a Burt Ward-style Robin. I 100%. Mean, the color,
totally.
The colors are all there. So, if you're the voice actor and you're the writers, that's kind of what you're feeding out for it. Yeah. And that's just going to feed up more camp just naturally.
Holy rusted metal, Batman. It was like that kind of shit, like throughout the first, like, yeah.
They don't call you Batman for nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. That's a classic. Yeah, he definitely comes into his own, especially by the time he gets to be Nightwing in the later season. Very cool. All right. Well, you guys got any other closing thoughts, or you want to rank this and then start talking about part two?
Yeah, so I'm good to rank it. Remind me how we've done the other two parters. So we have ranked them separately, right? So okay, so all right.
That way we don't forget about what happened and then mix things.
All right, we got the list pulled up.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of our two parters so far, Mark, we've had Robin's Reckoning part one and part two. We've had Two-Face part one and part two. We've had The Cat and the Claw part one and part two.
Heart of Steel.
And we've had Heart of Steel and Feet of Clay part one and part two. So a lot of origin episodes, obviously. For various different characters. And then Heart of Steel is like Batman versus AI, like Blade Runner kind of stuff, which is actually the more that we watched it, the more I thought it aged a lot better than I remembered. So I'm gonna let someone else go first this time.
I mean, I'll kick it off because I feel like you guys might be more positive on this episode than me. I like this episode a lot, but I don't think that it's when we talk. So we used to do this whole thing in the very early days of the pod where On Leather Wings was one of our favorite episodes in the early days because it was the first one. It was a really cool, moody episode. And we used to say, oh, is it better or worse than On Leather Wings? But that was when we had like six episodes and On Leather Wings kind of ended up right in the middle. I'm back there right now. Is this better or worse than On Leather Wings? I think it's better, but not much better.
I think it's better. I think it's got a lot of A tier. Yeah, I think A is good. I think it's got a lot of good like Batgirl intro stuff without having to completely rely on introducing Barbara the whole time because we've already met her, so they can kind of jump in, you know. I love the political corruption in the cartoon, not in real life. And then I just think I think tying it into Two-Face is a smart call. I think it's a fun episode. So, and this one, I think especially has a lot more of the mystery aspect of it. So this was a fun detective episode of Batman, the animated series, which is the part two is a lot more like action based. And I actually like the detective stuff a lot more. Like I had totally forgotten who Gil Mason was until I booted this episode up the other night. And I was like, this is kind of fun. Like that they really don't like just spoon feed it to kids where they're just like, yeah, the new deputy commissioner. I was like, wow, it's so subtle how they introduce the guy. And then like slowly as the episode goes on, you're like, this guy's kind of a scumbag. Like at the beginning of the episode, Jim's like trying to hook him up with Barbara and stuff. And by the end of it, you're like, kill that guy, drop him in the Gotham Bay. So I would put it mid to high. I actually think I like Shadow of the Bat part one more than Robin's Reckoning part one, actually, which might be heresy. I know, Mark, that's your Dick Grayson origin episode. But I think from a episode construction, this is a lot more mystery and stuff that I personally gel with.
I think what we're going to come into for part two, which is the things that are going to push part two higher for me, which is more Harvey Bullock, more Matches Malone. If it had each one of those things, I'd rank it higher, but it just doesn't. I might put it right underneath On Leather Wings. Like I'm looking at this list and I'm thinking I might like On Leather Wings more.
On Leather Wings is good. It is good. We always forget how good it is.
On Leather Wings is like perfect Batman. It's like this noir monster thing with the man bat and Batman and the blimps and the beautiful animation and the Art Deco buildings and the moody tone and the score.
Yeah,
I can't. So here's the thing: is that like really, I don't really care, but I can't. the peak is Joker's Wild. Anything below that, I'm like kind of fluid with, but I can't put this. I can't put this above Joker's Wild. So as long as this lands below 18, I'm fine with wherever it goes.
What do you think about it in relation to Zatanna?
I think I would say I like this better than. Or no, Zatanna had all the cool stuff with the flashbacks with her dad. Yeah. I would say I like Zatanna more than this. Mark? I would say I give Zatanna better.
I like Zatanna better.
All right. Why don't we then?
If you're so smart, why aren't you rich? Is that the VR?
No, episode? That is the first Riddler episode where they have the giant Minotaur maze.
Oh yeah. That's right.
Yeah. And he gets fired from his job and stuff.
I actually might put this below those two. I actually might put this above If You're So Smart and then below Zatanna.
I think it's better than Appointment in Crime Alley, On Leather Wings, and If You're So Smart, Why Aren't You Rich? Why don't we do the new number 26?
So the new number, it comes below Zatanna.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I love the Zatanna origin with Bruce Wayne working with Zatara. I think that's really cool, like as an escape artist and stuff.
Why did we put If You're So Smart, Why Aren't You Rich this high?
I think we were just really excited that the Riddler was there.
We like the Riddler a lot.
I like that episode. I actually don't know if it's better than On Leather Wings, but wait until we get to the end and we can reshuffle. We could do like a a reshuffle draft.
Well, no, this master list is going to be preserved in the annals of history.
We're going to put in the Smithsonian.
Yeah, I'm going to frame this shit when we get done with it. It
belongs in our museum.
It's going to be one of the many, many Gotham museums is where it's going.
Yeah, exactly. And we're back. All right. Our last episode of the evening is Shadow of the Bat Part 2. So picking things up where we left off, same title card, same writer and directing crew. So no need to spend time talking about that besides the fact that you guys did a great job. All right, 2-minute plot synopsis, buckle up. Due to Batman's disappearance, Robin sets off to question Gil about his involvement with the shootings and Gordon's arrest. When he arrives at Gil's, Batgirl is already there. They both witness Gil getting a call, and it's calling him to a meeting with a mysterious contact. Batgirl pretends she will not pursue, but she follows in secret and arrives at a rundown train station. Robin is already on site, tying up various goons, kind of stealthing his way through the tunnels there. In the tunnels, Two-Face is questioning Mason if he knows this matches Malone character. It's revealed that Two-Face set up Mason in Gordon's office. Between the criminal underworld and the bureaucratic siege, Two-Face plans to run the city. Batgirl and Robin surprise attack the gang, and Two-Face is able to put together that Matches must be Batman if Robin would be coming to save him. Two-Face opens fires on where Matches is hiding and then runs off, ordering his gang to blow up the tunnel entrance on the way out. Robin, Batman, and Batgirl reunite, or unite for the first time, as you say, as Two-Face blows up another part of the tunnel to flood the whole thing. Before the water cascades in, Batman orders Batgirl to stay out of his and Robin's way. The trio tries to escape the tunnels, but only Batgirl is able to get away from the flood. At GCPD lockup, Gordon's cell is blown up from the outside, and he's taken into custody by Two-Face's gang, disguised as men working for Rupert Thorne. Batgirl calls GCPD to warn them of the attack, but learns that Gordon has already broken out. Robin and Batman ride a half-submerged train car out of the tunnels and through a breaker wall. They both set out to the wharf, where they overheard that Gordon was to be executed. At the wharf, Gil and Two-Face are about to throw Gordon into the bay after shooting him, but before doing so, Gil vows to take care of Barbara with like this weird scumbag delivery. It's really creepy. Batgirl chucks a smoke bomb into the fray and is able to free Gordon from their clutches. Batman and Robin dispatch with Two-Face and his gang, but Batgirl has her sights set on stopping Gil from escaping. Batgirl and Gil fight on this speedboat, and Gil unmasks her, but then she knocks Gil out and saves both of them before the boat crashes. An indicted Gil Mason is revealed to now be in a coma, thus keeping Batgirl's secret safe. And Commissioner Gordon tells the reporters that he's happy to be reinstated and to welcome a new bat person to Gotham. Dick asks Bruce how he thinks Batman would feel about it, and Bruce replies that he's sure there's always room for one more. Shadow of the Bat Part 2. Did you think of the Justice League line?
I immediately thought of the end of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. It's hard not to, but he's like, I'm sure there's room for one more. And I was just like,
6 brown chairs. Yeah. All right, Mark, what did you think of Part 2 for Shadow of the Bat? You said you felt like it elevated more than Part 1 for you. Why is that?
Bullock. It's all Bullock for me.
Yeah, Harvey Bullock is a great character.
He's just a terrible cop, and he's so self-unaware that he's a terrible cop.
He eats that whole pizza in one bite.
He's eating the pizza while Gordon is starving. He's like, the food here is awful, and he's on the other side just eating a whole pizza.
Dude, can we fucking talk about how unappetizing that pizza looked, too? It looked
very
like
TMNT goo. Yeah.
It was TMNT pizza for sure.
Worse than TMNT. At least in TMNT, the pizza holds some sort of triangular shape. He's eating what looks like overnight oats in the form of pizza. It's like sloshing around his hands. I'm like, dude.
It's like on his shirt and everything. Yeah.
I think it's on brand for Bullock. Sure. Is like, he probably goes to the cheapest pizza place. He doesn't care about the way he looks. But when they bust out and the wall breaks down and they take Gordon and Bullock's there, he's like, somebody help. Not a blasted cop around when you need one. You're like, Bullock, you're a cop.
You have a gun.
You're right there. He just watches it all happen. And it's so funny to me.
Yeah.
Also funny to me was the half-submerged train.
So good,
because something about it, and I think they changed the music, and it's very silly music as they kind of like float down, but it's a very like treacherous moment where they're basically drowning. But they have this silly like trolley music as they like are floating away. So I enjoyed that. And it's good to see all the justice. I mean, they catch the guy, they indict people, which is very Batman. I mean, there was a moment there to like mysteriously let him die on the boat, but they're like, no, this shows that Batgirl's not gonna kill people.
For sure.
So they save that there.
Love the giant coin falling on Two-Face.
The giant coin was great because that's a big old call out to the Batcave as well with the oversized penny.
The penny, the giant penny was introduced.
Almost got him.
Almost got him. Yep. And it's now displayed in the cave. And having Two-Face get smashed by the coin, and then Gordon go, well, you don't see that every day. The coin flips Two-Face. Yeah. And it's like, hey, this guy cracking the jokes.
I like that. It's like, Gordon, you're not traumatized at all.
He's like very fine with everything. Like the only emotion he shows is when the guy's like, I'll take care of Barbara. He's like, you son of a bitch. He's like, which like, good for you, man. He's a good dad.
Yeah. That cracking up, man.
So overall, I just enjoyed it. Probably a lot more than part one. I think it all sort of came together, and it felt a little bit more action-packed as well.
Very much more action-packed, definitely. Definitely. Zach, what'd you think of part two?
So I'm going to kind of like, I'll say that I really enjoyed this episode, but I actually kind of am going to like flip-flop, and I mean, I might be the dissenting opinion here, but the first part being like all set up really intrigued me. Like I liked all the character dynamic stuff and like the figuring out what's going on. This episode is all action, which is cool. But, you know, action in an animated show is, you know, it is what it is. It's cool. But like, I really, really like when characters are talking and there's intrigue and there's like the mysteriousness of what's going on. By this point in this episode, like the whole second part, we know what's going on. It's just it goes from cool fight scene to cool fight scene to cool fight scene to cool fight scene to climax to ending. So it really depends on what you're looking for. But to me, I was more intrigued with part one than I was with the second part of this. I think that the resolution is cool, but it's all action, which if that's what you're looking for, two thumbs way up. But for me, like, I actually kind of like the buildup more than I like the payoff here. So I thought the episode was really, really good. I agree with you guys. Like, some of the cool set pieces are really, really fun. The train car scene is awesome. The ending is awesome. I particularly like, I mean, my animation cell shout out is Two-Face in the suit. I think this is the first time we see him in the suit, right? The half-colored suit. I don't think he wears that.
He was that. Yeah, he wore that in Two-Face Part 2, as well as Almost Got Him.
Okay. Like for whatever reason, it would look seem more pronounced, like the black and
I like
white suit.
This might be the first time we've seen him wear a hat in a while, though. He looks good in a hat.
Yeah, he's looking just, in a hat.
Just, you know, we can't see that weird white strand and tuft of hair, but he looks badass. Yeah.
But I like that. I like Two-Face in this. I really like the ending, as cheesy as it was, as much as it invoked BVS. Like, I still really did like the ending, you could hear the emotion swelling, the music swelling. It's like, I think we have room for one more or whatever. And it's like, I was like, oh yeah, Batgirl, she's here. She's part of the crew now. Everyone likes her.
She whoops ass in this too. I love the Batgirl suit for the debut with like the yellow bat symbol and stuff like that. I think it's really cool. They've since changed Batgirl's costume to be purple. So that way with all the adventure, it's like purple and yellow. So that way with all the adventures with Nightwing, they're not two people wearing black and blue, which I think is smart for the comics and to have that dichotomy. But I think for like this specific like instance, it looks really cool. I'm also just a fan of how the mask is animated, where you can actually like see Batgirl's real eyes as opposed to like white holes in a mask.
It makes her more emotive, but yeah, it
definitely
also looks
more expressive for more sure. Expressive. Although those Batman eyes can get really expressive when he's like sad and stuff, which is, you know, kudos to the animators.
Yeah, when they like they go down and like over.
And when he's watching Andrea and that guy go out to dinner and he's like,
yeah,
he's very pissed. Yeah. Oh man. But I really enjoyed it too. I thought it was a very fun, action-packed like finale, right? And I think I like what Mark mentioned, where it's like they tie off all their loose ends from the first episode.
Right.
Nothing was funnier to me though, besides the Bullock pizza thing. Then Harvey calls Gil Mason, who is embedded in the GCPD, to personally come to the tunnel so that he can try to ID a guy that they think might be somebody, but they're not sure, or they might hire him, which is just like whenever Batman disguises his matches Malone.
Yeah.
He's always in these weird situations where people are trying to snuff out who he is. Right. And I just love that there's a line where Richard Mole, which RIP Richard Mole, by the way, he's a fantastic two-faced voice actor, where he's like, ever seen this guy in GCPD lockup? And the guy's like, no. He's just like, you called me all the way down here to ID a perp. And he's like, we got to figure out who he is. It's just so funny to me.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Makes zero sense for an otherwise ironclad scheme by Two-Face to keep this corruption going for so long.
Yeah. I liked a lot of the payoff stuff too. This is one of the first times though in these two-parter episodes where I was like, I wonder if this would be better served as just one long first episode rather than a two-parter. Because I do like the cliffhanger aspect of the first one, but I almost, you know, it just goes right into the action. It's almost like this is the kind of the climax, like you're waiting for it. And then this episode starts and it's all climax. It's just action, 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 and then a resolution. It's like,
oh yeah,
it's pretty crazy. So if that's what you're looking for, I mean, this episode is the titties in that respect, but you know,
I think if I had to wait like a week in between episodes, this episode would give me everything I wanted. Just to be the setup and the questions and then just the resolution throughout the entire second one. So, I mean, the way that we watch TV now is so different than how it was released.
Right. Yeah.
So to have cliffhangers that are just out there and then you're like thinking about it for a week and then, you know, as opposed to a show that just gives you more questions, you just get everything you want in the part two and it's self-contained.
For sure.
That's awesome. That's such a great feeling.
This is a small interjection, but DC part two-parters, okay? My favorite cliffhanger of all time, I remember to this day watching this for the first time. It was a rerun, I'm pretty sure, but it's in the first Justice League, not Justice League Unlimited. There's an episode called Hereafter, part one and part two. And in Hereafter part one, Superman dies, or they think that he dies. What happens is Toy Man teleports him to an alternate dimension in time. And they do the whole death of Superman mourning thing where they have the funeral. Jeez. And Kevin Conroy gives this really good like admittance at Superman's grave about why he always admired Superman and stuff like that. It's just like really good, deep, like mythology stuff.
Yeah.
And the best thing is that cliffhanger ends by showing Superman in the other dimension in time. And he like his hand starts to move as he wakes up. And you're just like, and you get like so excited at the end. And then the whole second episode is like what Superman's been up to, essentially, until he comes back. And then it's just great. And also Lobo tries out for the Justice League in that episode. And that's just amazing. So shout out to that.
The main man.
The main man.
Jason Momoa. It's going to be Lobo.
We'll see. All right. Well, did you guys have any other specific thoughts before we rank this? Favorite, Zach said you already had your visual moment, right?
Yeah, my cell would probably, what did I say earlier? It's already kind of escaping me. I said it. Oh.
I don't remember.
I did maybe say you didn't it, say earlier, it. Though. I thought I did say it. Maybe I was talking about, was I not talking about Harvey and the ending or the Two-Face suit? Or
no,
what
yeah,
I
the suit.
About?
Yeah,
the
you, suit? Like, I like, the... you like Harvey in the suit.
I like Harvin the suit. I like Harvin the suit. It's cool.
You like Harvin the suit?
Yeah, it's a cool suit. I want a suit like that. That's the cool suit.
Yeah, I like the image of the guy just like leaning up against the wall and then the Robin green gloves come out and just like grab him. Like that. I thought that was cool.
I feel like I can't just say Bullock with a pizza, but
no, you can absolutely.
You can absolutely
say Bullock,
okay.
Bullock
with a
pizza.
Yeah, no, yeah, just Bullock.
Stranger Things have been
pizza.
Said before on this pod for sure.
Bullock slamming an entire pizza in like one bite. Yeah, him just standing there with it like flopping down. You're like, it's a one shot of exactly what that character is.
Here's one for you.
There it is. Matches.
There he is.
Matches.
Old Matches Malone. Are you between? Oh, no.
There it is. That's what I was trying to find. Right there.
Good stuff.
Oh, Robin.
I like where he's like, hey, Batman, I brought your suit for you. And then he's starting to change, and Batman's like, do you mind? Barbara's standing there. All right. Well, I say we rank this thing and tie this pretty little present up with some string. So, Mark, you like this more. Zach, you like part one more.
That's kind of where I am. Where this ranks, I really don't have a, I don't have a super big dog in this race. But again, I'll stand out by the saying, like, wherever this goes, I like, it sounds like you got, am I wrong in saying that you guys are both thinking like A tier for this one?
I would say so, yeah.
I think A, but I don't think it's higher than part one. I actually, while I respect what Mark is saying in terms of like a more fun episode, I love the detective aspect of the first episode as well. It's like, cause it's both, it's Barb showing her crime solving skills and like doing the legwork before then donning the suit and kicking ass, which is what Batman would do. Whereas like Dick Grayson, it took him a while under training with Batman to do all that kind of stuff. I think it's like a really cool intro to her as Batgirl. So I would actually put them like pretty close to each other though.
Yeah, I could concede that it could go under part one.
Yeah, I feel like if it's like right under it, I feel like that would almost be perfect.
Hey, I mean, you guys are speaking to the choir here, but if you want, if we put this right below Shadow of the Bat part one and above If You're So Smart, Why Aren't You Rich? I'm like all about that. I mean, that's exactly where I would have put it given the current rankings. Like, I can't in good faith put this anywhere above like Zatanna, I think, is better. POV, I think we just loved. It's a classic. POV
is cool. I think Feet of Clay is also like kind of, we kind of forget how fun that one was. And also like real crazy wild ending to that with Matt Hagen like losing his mind by looking at all the variations of himself. And it's the, like the only episode where the villain gets away too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And like toward the top of A tier, we have like things that didn't, that were really good that didn't quite cross the A tier barrier. Like Joker's wild to me. One of my favorite episodes of this show. That's like in the A tier, right? Like
I love Robin's Reckoning part two. I think the Dick Grayson turning the other cheek and not actually killing Tony Zuko on the pier and then talking to Batman about it is still one of my absolute favorite moments in the entire show. I think that's all you really need to know about the Dick Grayson commitment to being Batman's partner. Unfortunately, obviously they wind up having another big falling out later on, but we'll get to that when we get to that, you know? But I think that that's great. But yeah, I'm totally happy putting Shadow of the Bat part two right underneath part one as the new 27.
Well, there it goes.
Wait.
Is that the, how, didn't we have another part two parter that came? Yeah. Heart of Steel part two and one. We put those right next to each other as well.
I tend to think, honestly, that the two parters that fit so well together are hard to separate in rankings. I genuinely think that. Obviously, we didn't rank them in sequential order for Heart of Steel, but like Two-Face Part 1 and Two-Face Part 2 are very, very tonally different.
Totally different, yeah.
And same with Feet of Clay. So it's like, it's actually kind of easy to split those up. Cat in the Claw is also one that comes to mind, where it's like the first one is like really cool Selina Kyle stuff with Bruce Wayne and also introducing Catwoman, and then part two is just like, what if Catwoman fought terrorists on, you know, and he's just like, oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Big departure. Yeah.
Okay,
awesome. All right, well, so
look
yeah
at that, new 58 fucking episodes of this show. Look at that,
we are getting there, man. We are getting there. All right, well, that brings us to the end of our pod. Before we close things up, just to give everyone a heads up, the next time we do Radio Vision, we will be talking about three more episodes. Blind as a Bat is the first one, and then The Demon's Quest, part one and part two.
Another so two-parter.
Zach, you don't have to wait too long for your Talia. Just another instance. So you were off by one episode.
I was off by one.
Very excited to talk about The Demon's Quest, for sure.
Mark, do you recognize these episodes at all? Are these like things that you remember?
I have seen this show over and over, so it's in there somewhere. But a lot of the times I need to see like the first little scene and then it all floods back.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The Demon's Quest is an interesting one. It is an almost beat by beat adaptation of the Denny O'Neil, Neil Adams comic introduction for Ra's al Ghul.
Okay, cool.
So that'll be fun to talk about that. But it also is very like 70s comics, like for sure. So think James Bond meets Batman, and that's kind of what we're going with, which is awesome.
Dude, I just popped a little chubby when you said that. James Bond meets Batman.
For sure. Ooh-wee. Mark, thank you for joining us on Radio
Mark, Mission. You are a fantastic guest. You
thank you for excellent. Bringing your own notes and everything. Yeah. You're more than prepared. I also wanted to thank you for submitting your question for Mask of the Phantasm. Your question was a very fun conversation topic. And I wanted, before we close this up, I wanted you to tell Zach what you texted me about what your marketing strategy would have been for Phantasm.
Oh, yeah. So I was hoping one of you would pick this, but nobody did. A Hulk hands style Mask of the Phantasm, like knife hand.
Oh, shit.
Like a Nerf hand?
Made of foam.
Nerf hand?
If I had that as a kid, I'd just be running around phantasming people. You'd be
like Steve Martin, your angel of death.
That's exactly what would happen. But that would never fly as a toy today. But when this movie came out, it absolutely would have been totally within the realms of possibility. So
for sure.
If that was a toy, I think a lot more people would have seen the movie.
I don't even think they sell Hulk hands anymore, right? That's the fucking concussion waiting to happen.
No, because
right?
It's just because you're just inciting people to punch each other. And like the funniest thing about Hulk hands is in all the commercials, it just shows people punching them together. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's
oh, you're
not
taking
what
that right to the cock.
Those.
I'm aiming right at the tip of your penis and full force right there.
I think Zach, fantasy punishment losers should have to get punched by everyone in the league with a Hulk hand.
With the Hulk hand.
No face shots, just like body shots only.
This is a wrong show. But would you rather take 12 Hulk hands to the cock or would one linebacker sacking you? I would take the linebacker.
No
personally.
Way, because the linebacker could paralyze me. I'd take the 12 Hulk hands.
You're padded up. You're in pads and a helmet. You're gonna take 12.
You
Hulk
clearly
hands
have
right
not watched
dick?
Enough NFL where those guys still get concussed and they train for that all year.
Dude, you're going to lose one of your testicles. I don't understand how this is. You're going to.
You said to the cock.
But they're right there.
Yeah, you might miss them. You never know. I could shift
you
around
might miss
a little
them. Do you see how big Hulk hands are? They're like this big. Is your cock this big?
No, we're wrapping this up.
All right, we're ending the show.
Too
Thank
far.
You, Mark.
Too far.
Yeah. Mark, you join. I just want to say this for as a one of the co-founders of Radio Vinny, along with my buddy John Swansong Parker here.
He's the founder. I'm just the talent.
No. We're co-founders of this podcast. Are you kidding me? This show wasn't what it was until you joined the show. I just want to say you've joined an esteemed list of guests, and you came in swinging. You had facts ready to go. You had the plugs ready to go. You had the email handy.
Most
like,
prepared guest.
You're prepared
I'm
guest.
To you,
I
Cal.
Say. I say welcome to the family. Thank you for being on. It's a great pleasure to have you here. I can't wait. You should come on. You're welcome back for any BTOS episode going forward. We'd be happy to have you again, man. It was great to have you.
I love talking Batman, and I love talking these animated shows. They're my favorite.
Definitely.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, yeah, it was our pleasure, Mark. Thank you again. And thank you to all the listeners who are tuning in. We love doing this. It's a passion project of mine. It's been a lot of fun going through. Great opportunity right now with a lot of Batman content. Go listen to our 30th anniversary review and coverage of the Mask of the Phantasm. It was a lot of fun to put that together. You can hear a little bit of Mark's voice, not audio, but his question in that episode, as well as Zach, myself, Cal, to hear. There's a lot of fun, interaction between a bunch of people that care about this property. And we thank you guys for listening to these because you clearly care about it too. And that means a lot to me. And if you want to listen to more Radiovania content, whether it's the Radiovision feed or the Radiovania main show, which we should be back soon to talk about our best of 2023, hopefully sometime soon. Check all that out at radiovania.com. You can go to YouTube and search for Radiovania to see any of the videos that we put together. And if you have anything you want us to talk about as like an end capper to 2023 or things that you're excited about in 2024, hit us up at radiovaniashow@gmail.com. Let us know. We will read it on the pod. and follow us on the socials, Radio Vanny Show on Instagram and Threads. And boys, it was a pleasure doing this with you guys.
Always and a pleasure.
Thank you all for listening once again, and we'll catch you next time. Same Bat Podcast, same Bat Podcast feed. Good night.